This is Brian Lehr's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, April 12th. I'm Bridget Bergen, senior reporter in the WNYC and Gothamist newsroom. Happy Friday, everybody. I'm filling in for Brian today. He'll be back on Monday. For President Biden, the economy giveth and the economy taketh away. Last Friday's job growth numbers exceeded expectations by a large margin, but Wednesday's inflation report did too. Here's how former President Trump characterized that report as he got off a plane, so there's a little background noise.
Biden has totally lost control of inflation. It's back. It's raging back. The number today was very high, very bad. It's actually much higher because they exclude various categories.
And in case you missed that, he said, Biden has totally lost control of inflation. It is raging back. President Biden, for his part, had a different view.
We have dramatically reduced inflation from 9% down to close to 3%. We're in a situation where we're better situated than we were when we took office, where inflation was skyrocketing. And we have a plan to deal with it, whereas the opposition, my opposition, talks about two things. They just want to cut taxes for the wealthy and raise taxes on other people.
To talk about the state of the economy, how consumers and voters think it's doing, and how both parties are addressing it, we're joined by John Cassidy, New Yorker staff writer who has a column about economics and politics. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thanks very much for inviting me on. Glad to be here.
And John, after that jobs report, but before the new inflation numbers on Wednesday, you wrote a column titled, "Will Historic Job Growth Bring an End to the Vibe Session?" By vibe session, do you mean kind of a disconnect between the health of the economy and people's perception that things are bad?
That's exactly what I mean. The phrase vibe session came into vogue a couple of years ago. Now it's been, and it's just to a way of expressing exactly what you said. If you look at a lot of the economic figures, including the job figures and including inflation figures until the most recent ones, they've been very positive over the last year or so. And just doesn't seem to be. It is reflected in some economic sentiment statistics, but not in the poll ratings and certainly not in Joe Biden's approval ratings.
And as you start to touch on it, how does this inflation report potentially change the outlook for you?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, obviously, Trump and the Republicans have leapt upon it because it did show a slight increase over 1 month. But it's not that big a deal, economically speaking. Basically, what happened was this consumer price index, which is a measure of all the consumer goods in the economy, rose by 0.4% last month. On Wall Street, they'd been expecting 0.3%. So that was an increase over expectations of 0.1%, which is pretty much nothing really on a month-to-month basis. But it was the third month in a row that the number has come in slightly higher than expected. And so instead of being on a downward trend now, inflation is basically sort of seems to have bottomed out in the low threes and is not heading to 2%, which is the Federal Reserve's target. So in economic terms, people can live with 3% inflation. It's not like, you know, hyperinflation or anything like it. But politically, it's a very awkward narrative for the Biden administration.
Well, let's do a little Econ 101 for our listeners. I know the stock market didn't respond particularly well to the inflation news because it likely means the Fed is going to keep interest rates where they are longer instead of maybe cutting them as early as June. So can you talk a little bit about why that is?
Yeah. I mean, there's two different stories here. That's one of the problems with this narrative. One is, how's the economy at large doing? And number two is, what about the financial markets and the Federal Reserve? For most people, the first story is a lot more important than the second one. But the media tends to focus on the second one because that's where the news is and the Federal Reserve meets every month or whatever. Anyway, the Federal Reserve has been promising to cut interest rates starting in June, most people thought. And most people thought there'd be three interest rate cuts this year. At the moment, the rate's over 5%. That would bring it back down to maybe 4.5%. Again, not a huge deal, but would be a big signal to the financial markets that interest rates are coming down. So the stock market has been zooming ahead on expectations of this interest rate cut. But what's happened is that's now changing because people on Wall Street think the Federal Reserve won't cut interest rates or won't cut them as quickly because inflation's not coming down as quickly as they had expected. So that's a big financial market story. And if you've got a lot of money in the stock market, it's a big story to you too. But most people don't have a lot of money in the stock market,
sure,
and are more concerned with how the economy is doing at large. So there's a sort of a bit of a different, you know, two sets of narratives here. I'm not saying inflation doesn't matter. Of course it does. But I think the larger economic story is really one about two sort of conflicting things going on. Number one, in terms of GDP growth and jobs and spending, the economy is doing pretty well, very well, in fact. Since Biden came to office, there have been 15.2 million new jobs created. The unemployment rate has been below 4% for, I think, more than 2 years now, which is the first time that's happened since the 1960s. Hmm. They're both very good statistics. Now, on the other side of the equation, prices, consumer prices, gasoline, especially food, obviously zoomed up a year or two ago. And I think that's still very much in people's minds. When they go to the supermarket, they still see that things like eggs and meat are a lot more expensive than they used to be. And the fact that inflation's coming down doesn't make any difference to the level of prices, because inflation is a measure of the rate of change of prices. So if eggs have gone up from $2 for a dozen to $4 a dozen, and then they stop and just stay there at $4 a dozen, people still think, oh, that's inflation. It's actually not inflation. The inflation was a couple of years ago, but it still makes people feel bad. And I think that's what the most common explanation of the so-called vibe session is. Even though the economic statistics for now look good, people are still basing things on the big inflation boom we had a year or two ago.
This is an election year, and consumers slash voters don't seem to be particularly happy with the economy. Polls are showing they hold President Biden to blame for that.
Well, it's again, there's a sort of contradictory narratives there. If you look at indexes of consumer sentiment, the University of Michigan, for example, has a sort of monthly survey. It's like an opinion poll, really, where they talk to, I think, 1,000 or so people and ask them how they're feeling about the economy in various ways. These are consumers. And their index of consumer sentiment is actually up nearly 30% over the last year, which is a big jump. That suggests that, you know, most people actually are feeling in their own lives a bit better about things and about how the economy is going as they perceive it in their own lives. But if you ask them how the national economy is going, you do still tend to get, 50 odd, 60% say it's going badly, and somewhere in the 30s that it's going well. That's the problem for the administration. The sort of improved consumer sentiment hasn't fed through yet into the poll ratings. And of course, the Republicans are now seizing on these new inflation figures to try and arrest that movement. I mean, there have actually been some changes in the polls over the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. Biden's doing a bit better in the polls, and the polls are basically tied now, whereas a few weeks ago, Trump was leading by 2 or 3 points. So that may be linked to how people are thinking about the economy. It's not clear yet. But certainly, if you just ask people, do you approve of Biden's ratings or how Biden is handling the economy, the findings are still almost universally negative.
Well, I want to play a little bit from a project WNYC has going. It's called Suds and Civics, and we're chatting with people about politics in laundromats in the region. Here's a recent example of a conversation with Chris in Beacon, New York.
The economy is horrible right now. It costs me an entire paycheck to buy groceries, stuff like that, you know what I mean? But that's all tied up in politics and the greed of, you know, the corporate machine. So we just try to stay positive, you know?
So, John, in this case, Chris is blaming the system, the, quote, corporate machine. President Biden, in a written statement, acknowledged, quote, we have more to do to lower costs for hardworking families, and added that he's calling on corporations, including grocery retailers, to use record profits to reduce prices. Is there any way to determine how much of the higher prices are companies passing along versus, you know, kind of thinking, hey, let's just see how high we can go before people quit buying?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. There's certainly been a substantial increase in profit margins in some sectors over the last few years. And I actually wrote a piece a couple of weeks ago about an investigation the Federal Trade Commission is now doing of big grocery firms like Amazon, because they own Whole Foods and Walmart and Kroger's, the big supermarket chain. And the FTC has produced figures showing that their profit margins, even as inflation has come down, they've still been going up and have been making, you know, record profits, because basically their cost inputs are going down. The cost of, you know, where they get their food from has gone down a bit, maybe. And they keep the prices up because, as you say, they doesn't seem to have hit their demand. Even though people are economizing a bit, they're still selling enough products to make profits. So certainly padding profit margins has been part of it. It's very difficult to break it down into exactly how much of the inflation rate is due to that and how much is due to changes in costs. But it's certainly been a factor. And the Biden administration, I think, was pretty slow to get on this. There were some economists out there who were pointing this out even during the peak of the inflation, because this profit padding started pretty early. Biden administration over the last few months has sort of pivoted and made this a bigger part of its messaging about the economy. And I think, you know, that's perfectly justified, because you just have to look at the figures or look at the profit reports or corporate statements. And there has been some profit padding here, no doubt about it.
We're getting a lot of really great texts to this question and questions for you, John. Thematically, I just want to note that a lot of listeners have talked about the cost of food and the cost of groceries and how that has become a real issue. But this listener texts, I notice people complaining about inflation but still spending. They complain about gas prices but buy huge gas-powered trucks. They complain about restaurant prices but it is still hard to get reservations. They complain about airline and hotel prices but travel is booming. Why the disconnect?
That's all true. I mean, everything the listener said is true in that text. It's a very good question. I mean, as I say, it's part of this vibe session, sort of debate. If you just look at people's spending patterns, spending's been very strong, but job growth's been very strong. You would say, well, that, you know, people should feel better about things. But as I said, I think it goes back to this inflation shock. You've got to remember, for the last 20 years, really, we got used to having virtually no inflation. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the last big inflation in the 70s and 80s, but most people aren't. So they grew up, or they've spent the last 20 years in an environment where when they went to the store, the prices were pretty much the same as they were, you know, a year ago, and in some cases had fallen. But then suddenly inflation spiked up to 9% overall, and in some particular cases, including some very salient goods like meat and eggs and milk, the prices really did spike up a lot, 30-40%, 50%, 100% maybe, for some people. I mean, it seems to me that my price of my local eggs has definitely went up 100%. So, you know, that's the sort of, I think that's the disconnect. People still are mad about the increase in consumer prices for certain goods. In terms of restaurants, that's another thing which has definitely gone up. And, you know, New Yorkers like to eat out a lot. So that's will have impacted that. Fast food, even the cost of buying, you know, taking takeout as also one of the items which has gone up quite a bit. Now, you know, in terms of our overall consumer budget, that's not that big a deal. But again, it's a thing. And I think it feeds into this whole vibe session.
Sure. I mean, we've talked about these dueling narratives. How we've seen record job growth. Is there any link between the high job growth and inflation as well?
There doesn't seem to be, no, because until very recently, we've had record job growth and inflation's been coming down. I mean, that's the remarkable thing. I mean, you raise a very good point. Economists for years believed that, you know, if an unemployment went down, inflation would go up. That relationship is called the Phillips curve, and has been around for 50 years, named after a New Zealand economist, actually, Bill Phillips at the LSE. But anyway, that's getting off topic. So people, you know, economists thought that unemployment come down, inflation would spike as a general thing. But what we've seen over the last couple of years, the inflation rate spiked in, June 22 was a peak at about 9%. And since then, unemployment has come down steadily, as I said, and it stayed very low. We've had, you know, more than 2 years of unemployment below 4%, which is
a record going back to the late 1960s, and inflation hasn't got, it's been coming down, it's gone up a bit, but again, we're talking small changes here, you know, a couple of tenths of a percent. We'll just have to see if it, you know, it's the start of a bigger jump. But it, in terms of economics and welfare, you know, two or three tenths of a percent on the inflation rate is just not that big a deal. If it turns into a huge spike and we get back up to 10% and 9% inflation, obviously that would be a huge deal.
Sure.
But it's one or two or three tenths of a percent on the CPI doesn't make much difference to people's lives. But as I said, we're in an election season and every tenth of a percent is going to be fawed over and magnified and, you know, propagandized, et cetera, on both sides, et cetera.
At one point, people within the administration had started using a term, Bidenomics. Back in January, I spoke with Stephen Benjamin. He's a senior advisor to the president and a director of the Office of Public Engagement. And he sort of defended and defined the term.
Bidenomics means that we're focusing on a strategy that marshals all of our better instincts to put people to work in this country and build the American economy. And we're seeing the fruits of those labors.
John, is that a term you hear anyone use anymore? And do you think it helps or hurts the administration? And what are the ways that they are trying to stop inflation?
And again, very good question. I mean, I think Bidenomics didn't poll very well, so they don't use it as much as they used to. The president did try to embrace it at one point and, you know, used it in his speeches, but that seems to have stopped a bit. I mean, I think the president himself is very proud of his record and, you know, on various things, and has some reason for that. I mean, if you point to the industrial policy that they've introduced, reshoring jobs, getting the huge sort of semiconductor manufacturing plants, a big one has just opened in Arizona last week. That's the sort of thing that manufacturing employment's gone up about 800,000 or 900,000 since he took over. That's the sort of thing which Trump talked about, reshoring American manufacturing, but never actually did anything. You remember him arguing with the chairman of, or the chair rather, of General Motors and various other auto plants and steel manufacturers, et cetera, that they should reopen plants in the US, but nothing really happened. Under Biden, it has started to happen, both through the semiconductor manufacturing and the big grants for green investments, which have led to big investments in electronic vehicle plants all across the country. So Biden's got, you know, a lot to advertise. The problem is, every time he opens his mouth about the economy, people say, what about the price of eggs? What about the price of groceries? And so there's been a big debate, I think, inside the Biden camp about this. And you even saw, there was a report a couple of days ago about Ron Klain, former White House chief of staff and a very senior advisor to the president, still, I think, who was basically saying, like I just said, that there's not very much point talking about the economic record when people just say, well, I just been to the grocery store and prices have gone insane.
Right.
So it's a very difficult narrative to sell. And I think Klain and some other people think that Biden would be better, or the campaign would be better off focusing on other areas, especially, you know, the threat that Trump represents and the abortion issue and basically non-economic issues, rather than making Bidenomics the central issue in the campaign.
Just before we let you go, John, I'm wondering how immigration figures into the economic picture. The current migrant situation here in New York City has been a significant drain on the budget, but historically, immigrants have fueled economic growth, haven't they?
Oh, definitely, yes. I mean, the whole immigration issue is, I think, there have been some recent studies suggesting that one of the reasons actually inflation has come down at the same time as unemployment has also come down is immigration. That there's actually more work. As I said, most people think that if there's high pressure in the labor market, but, you know, a lot of people looking for workers, wages should go up, which would drive prices up as well. That hasn't happened. And it didn't happen in this most recent inflation report. The reason wasn't higher wages. In fact, in the employment report, which came out last week, wage growth came in at the lowest it's been for 2 years, 4.1%. So it isn't the higher wages which are driving up inflation to the extent inflation is going up a bit. Now, why is wage inflation Moderating at the same time unemployment's very low, because, as I say, if you can't find workers, the obvious thing to do is to offer them higher wages, and that should lead to higher wage inflation and could feed through to inflation, to consumer price inflation. One of the theories is that actually there's a lot more, there's been considerably more workers out there than officially counted because of undocumented migration. So the Census Bureau and the Congressional Budget Office, which both try and count the size of the labor force, disagree on this. The Census Bureau basically isn't counting a big influx of migrants over the last couple of years, whereas the CBO thinks that the labor force is bigger than officially estimated, and that's one thing which has helped inflation to come down. So to that extent, it's only it's not the full story, but if that story is true, then actually the surge in undocumented migration over the last couple of years has helped keep inflationary pressures down in the economy.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now. I want to thank John Cassidy, New Yorker staff writer, who has a column about economics and politics. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.